Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along as we take a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains here on the Ideas Net with Lori Tynebrody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor in Physical Therapy at the UW Medical School. Lori, great to have you back.
Good to be back.
And Bill, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming.
Wonderful to be here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I may lisp a little bit or something. I was at the dentist this morning and had a little Novocaine for a crown issue. And so,
what a way to start a Monday and a week, Larry.
King Larry, he's been crowned.
A numb upper lip. But we'll get through it. We already have lots of callers online. Let me give the number. We still have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 or via email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Michelle in Eau Claire. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I had a recent injury. I was running on a trail outside, and I clipped a tree root with my right foot and went flying forward and landed on my right hip. And I didn't feel like I landed that hard, so I just kind of got up and brushed myself off and kept running. But noticed after a while that I was having pain in my real low back on the opposite side. So I landed on my right hip, but the pain was in the left lower back, kind of radiating into the left buttock. And so over the past few days, any time I put my total weight on my left foot, I'll get kind of a shooting pain in my lower left back. So I'm just kind of wondering if you have any ideas about the anatomy of what's going on there.
Yes, we do.
Okay. A few things anyways. Michelle, how long ago was this again?
This was about 4 days ago.
About 4 days. Okay. And can I ask approximate how old are you?
Sure, I'm 35.
Okay. All right. Well, with a trauma like that, there are a number of small joints in the lumbar area. We have our sacroiliac joint along with the hip joint. And you can very easily sprain a joint in your spine, just like you can sprain an ankle. The thing you have to be concerned about, could there have been a fracture? And, you know, and if you were in your mid-50s or 60s, I'd be a little more concerned about that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's sharp pain with any weight on that left leg, and I'm assuming that's how your day starts out? I mean, when you get up in the morning, that's how it feels?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not constant. It's just kind of when I put the weight on that left foot, I'll get a sharp pain.
Right, right. And then as the day goes on, I'm assuming it gets worse? You're on your feet more? Okay. All right. Well, most likely what you did was to sprain a joint, and there are small facet joints in the low lumbar spine. Again, the sacroiliac joint is in that area. And, typically when somebody calls, it's only been 4 days. You know, oftentimes we say, you know, give it a few more days, especially if it's improving. But because of the trauma and the sharpness of your pain, I guess I'd recommend that you go in and be seen. And be examined. They can discuss with you whether x-rays are necessary or not. But that's what I would be thinking in terms of anatomy first and foremost.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And Ann in Milwaukee. We'll turn to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Thanks. Great show. I am retired, and my hands are okay. They've always been normal. A little crookedness, but not arthritic. I am getting arthritis in my right forefinger. It's swollen. It was dark. I may have knocked it a couple weeks ago. I can't remember. But it's swollen. It's hard to bend the joint fully, and it's uncomfortable. Now, does that mean I'm going to get more? Can I forestall getting more? Is heat good? Is ice good? What do I think now?
So this has been a couple of weeks, you said?
No, actually, I think I knocked my hand a couple weeks ago. You know, it didn't amount to much, so I didn't think about it.
But you said it was black and blue? Your finger? Okay.
It's swollen. Okay. It might be a little bit discolored near the joint, just a little bit pinkish blue, but not much. But it's the larger joint in the finger, not the second away from the fingertip, you know.
Okay, yep, got it, got it. Mm-hmm. Okay, and are you, you're still able to move it, but you just can't move it all the way?
I can't bend it all the way.
Okay.
It's puffy, it's swollen inside.
Okay. Well, if it's unlikely that you fractured anything because that would be a trauma that you would remember.
Oh, I don't have that kind of pain.
Right, right. So
sore, real sore.
Right, right. So at this point, you may have sprained it and you didn't notice it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's unlikely that you would have that kind of swelling in one joint from arthritis unless you did something. If you had went out and clipped all the deadheads off in your garden in one day, then you might have some an arthritis flare at a joint.
Uh-huh.
But in the absence of that kind of activity, I'd say that at this point, putting using a warm soak at the end of the day or using ice or alternating warm and cold. You can get a little bowl of water and set yourself up in front of your favorite Wisconsin public radio show or television show and put it in the cold for a minute and then put it in the warm for 3 minutes and go back and forth a few times. And that works well for swelling and for the pain.
Oh, that's great.
And while it's in there, just gently move it. Mm. And, you know, over the next 7 to 10 days, you should see improvement in that. And if you're not, then you should go in and be seen and have that looked at. But that alternating contrast bath, warm, where it's warm bath temperature, and then cold is cold. I'd put some ice cubes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And longer in the cold than the warm?
Nope.
You say?
The opposite. Longer in the warm, a minute in the cold.
Longer?
Three to one. Three minutes.
Three warm, one cold.
You got it.
You are wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Sarah in Zion, Illinois, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Sarah.
Okay, hi. Well, I have a hand problem also. I'm 46. My mom had really bad rheumatoid arthritis, and I've just developed pain in my thumbs over the last couple months. But the thing that is weird to me is that it's worse in my right thumb. And on my, there seems to be both soft tissue involved, and it also hurts in the bones. But it's like it's not the same every day. But about 15 years ago, I really sprained my thumb and my right thumb. And that's the one. I can feel it in that same spot now.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel it in the bones.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't pick things up. It's hard to stir. So it feels like arthritis, and yet there's like this soft tissue also. So I'm just confused.
Well, soft tissue arthritis does affect the soft tissue as well. So it affects the joint, and actually, by definition, it affects the soft tissues more than the bone. Arthritis is actually an inflammation of the articular cartilage, which is the cartilage that is over the bone. It's not the bone itself. So, and often what happens is you compensate, you use your hand differently because it hurts, and then the tendon and the muscles and some of the other surrounding soft tissues also hurt. Have you been cleared for rheumatoid arthritis?
Have I gone to a doctor? You know, I haven't. Cause seeing my mom with it, I know that it's, I don't know, I've just heard it's really hard to diagnose.
Yeah, and yeah. At this point, given your history of a significant thumb injury 15 years ago, it's not unreasonable that you have accelerated osteoarthritis at that joint. If I were you, I would go in and be seen. If you're already having trouble stirring things, picking things up, it's not too far away that you're going to be dropping things and so on. So I'd go in and get seen and learn about joint protective techniques, some gentle strengthening exercises, just things to prolong the life of that joint. There are splints that you can use for heavier activities, but I would start now to get on a good joint protective program. I'd see a certified hand therapist.
Yeah. And so when you go in, you can mention the history of your mom, and they can certainly evaluate you to the best of their ability regarding rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis typically starts in the wrist and hands. And oftentimes, first thing in the morning is the toughest time of the day. People wake up really stiff and sore, and they get a little better as the day goes on. But I would agree with Lori, with your history, it makes sense. You know, it's a good explanation as to why you may have some degenerative changes at that joint. But when you go in, make sure you mention the history of your mom, and then they can take that into consideration.
All right?
Yeah, all right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Joanne in Oak Creek, on to you now. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Hi, good morning. I'm calling to talk about some stiffness that I have noticed in my legs, especially in the top of my legs. I'm pretty close to 50. I have a sedentary job. I do some exercise, but I wouldn't call myself a regular exerciser. But what I've noticed is, especially after I've sat at my desk for a long period of time, when I get up, I have this stiffness in the top of my legs, and when I start walking, it's uncomfortable. It's not shooting pain or anything like that. It's just like it takes me a little while to get warmed up, and then I can start walking regularly again. And I'm wondering if that is, do I just chalk that up to the fact that I'm almost 50, and are there some things that I could be doing to help myself and to not have this stiffness so much.
Joanne, a couple of questions. When you say top of your legs, does it feel like it's in the muscle, like your quadriceps, or does it feel like it's in your knee joint or hip joint?
You know, I would say it's more in the muscle, and it's not really my knees. It's more, it would probably be closer to my hip area. And I have had some issues where I have had more stiffness in my hips lately, too. I did see my doctor about that several months ago, and I had an x-ray, and everything looked okay.
Okay. All right. And then once you get it from sitting, how long does it take for your legs to limber up?
Oh, probably maybe a minute, maybe no, really no more than a couple
okay.
minutes.
Okay, so
right.
Pretty quickly. Okay,
yeah.
so that's good. Well, it might be related to your hips that can cause some stiffness extending down into your legs. Again, activity, and whether it's riding a stationary bike, getting in the pool to do some exercise, walking, a combination of those are really good to keep the joints lubricated and to help strengthen the muscles from both an endurance perspective and a strength perspective. Especially with the job being pretty sedentary, I think that would be important for you to do. And, you know, during the day at work, it's those little reminders, whether you put a sticky on your monitor or you set a timer someplace, if you can, to get up every 20, 30 minutes, even just for a walk down the hallway to get a drink of water or whatever, should also help. But the fact that stiffness clears up so quickly is a good sign. And you know, joints and muscle are just telling you they would like a little more activity.
Yeah, I can't overemphasize how important it is, especially as we age, to stay active, whether it's walking, as Bill said, or riding a stationary bike or doing something. You need to have some sort of leisure time physical activity to maintain the health of your joints and your muscles and your tendons and your bones. And he's absolutely right, getting up and moving around. Another alternative to think about is to change your chair. There are things like chairs with balls in them that require a little bit more muscle activation to sit there and stay there, and you can roll and turn and do a little bit more muscle activity while you sit if you, you know, absolutely can't get up on a regular basis.
Okay.
All right. There
All
you
right.
go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Renee and Eau Claire, on to you in just a second, but I want to remind everybody that our guests today are Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. We're talking with them today about those aches and pains and sprains and strains. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And now we will turn to Renee in Eau Claire, who's been waiting patiently. Renee, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have severely sprained my left ankle twice. I supinate, so it was a lateral flexion. And I've had arch supports made, and that works fine unless I go on like a 3-plus mile hike or walk on uneven terrain.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of, you know, where your leg bone comes down into your foot and that whole malleosis on the lateral side of your ankle just becomes painful.
Yep.
And I don't know, I mean, would a brace, taping it, I don't know, do I need to,
yep.
What do I do?
Yep. Well, first I'd say to get on a good exercise program. There's been research done here by Dr. Keene and Dr. McGuine on balance training in people with chronic ankle sprains, and they've found that a good balance training program can prevent ankle sprain injuries. So the research is there to support a good balance program. So I'd say that's number one. And then number two would be a lace-up ankle brace for those long hikes on uneven terrain when you're just at risk for another injury. You can tape, but the research has shown that the tape loosens up after a short period of time. So the lace-up ankle braces are actually better because you can tighten them up as you go on. So I think those are available, you know, on the internet, probably at a local drugstore, et cetera.
Okay.
All right.
I do a lot of fitness, and I do a lot of balancing, and I don't have the risk of injury as much, again, but it's just, you know, like I said, when I do too much working out, then it's just hurts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes sense. Okay. The uneven terrain causes the biggest problem. That's that's also pretty typical. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, one of those lace-ups, that should help.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Nancy in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for letting me on. I'm actually calling in for my mom, and she was telling me about a week ago that she has really bad pain in her heel. And I thought, gosh, they've talked about this on that show.
On occasion.
But, when she isn't standing or using, you know, she's sitting for a while. Like she said, if I ride in the car, you know, for an hour or something, then I get up to walk. It's just excruciating pain when she steps on her heel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if she's sitting in her easy chair for a little long. She's 68 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She does have a history of a stroke. She has arthritis. She has some other issues going on, but the heel thing is kind of new.
Okay.
For her.
Okay. Does she have any gait abnormalities as a result of her stroke? Any leg spasticity or anything like that?
She has some spasticity in the affected side.
Okay.
And she doesn't use a walker. She probably should, but she doesn't. And so she does, you know, have kind of a hobbling gait, you know, kind of leaning forward.
Okay.
Like,
and is the heel pain in the affected limb or the non-affected limb?
The pain is in the, I think for a second, the affected limb.
The affected limb. Okay. All right. Well, I expect that she's been in physical therapy in the past for her stroke. It might be reasonable to go back and have them look at her again and look at her gait to see if some kind of arch support or lift in that foot might help. She probably has some plantar fasciitis. And you can treat that. Night splint works really well for treating that, where it holds the foot up in a flexed position. I'm not sure if that would work with her spasticity. Other than that, stretching and warming it up and some massage in that area is useful. You know, all of the things being equal, I'd recommend an arch support, looking at her shoes and a night splint and things like that. I'm just not sure if those usual interventions will work in the context of her stroke and spasticity, which is why I kind of recommend going back and having them take a look.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And Steve, in Stevens Point, we are on to you. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Good program.
Thanks.
I am a martial arts instructor in Port Edwards, and as part of class, I do a lot of training as far as balance, single-legged squats, and I just wanted to see if there were some other exercises that I could incorporate to kind of keep the variety there, to keep it fresh. Anything your guests would suggest?
You mean in terms of balance exercises?
Balance exercises, strengthening the supporting muscles in the knees, the ankles, and the hips. Those tend to be where injuries happen in Taekwondo. So,
where does one start? Yeah. The single leg things are all good. I would try to make things asymmetrical instead of symmetrical, where you somewhat disturb their balance. I don't know if you have any other kinds of balls or foam devices where they could stand on an unstable surface.
Okay.
Is another alternative for, you know, strengthening wall slides, wall sits. You can do things with partners where you do a single leg squat with a partner, you know, either back to back or facing each other.
Okay.
Are some other ideas?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. If you can give them some uneven or softer surface to stand on and do the activities you've been doing, and then you add more arm movements. You know, I have some patients who they play catch, or you know, they're throwing a ball off a rebounder while they're balancing on that one leg. Also, one of the things that can make it a little more difficult is with the single leg is do eyes open and eyes closed. So you can have them do some activities with eyes closed, stresses different parts of the nervous system as well.
The key is perturbation, to change it up and give them new and novel kinds of stimuli. And it can be almost anything that comes across your brain, as long as it doesn't put them at risk of injury.
Yeah, just keep them vertical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. All right. We just got one of these balls, 10-pound ball.
Plyo ball?
Yeah. We toss it back and forth.
Not through the window or not when you're having a fight or anything?
No. Okay. Actually, we have a king-size bed and Renee's on one side and I'm on the other and we just toss it back and forth.
Well, that's great.
Surprising how 30 or 40 tosses. Tosses. I'm starting to...
Yep. But you can even change that up with how you throw it. Instead of doing your typical chest pass, you can do a slight rotation with the lob. If you can, you can get it overhead if you can do that. Or you can squat and throw it.
Stand back to back and kind of twist and hand it off to each other in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And
pass it down through your legs, back to back.
Yeah, you don't need fancy equipment to get a good exercise.
Mm-hmm. Well, Renee is a basketball player, and she forgot and tried to bounce it once.
That can be a problem.
You didn't make a hole in your floor, did you?
No, and it didn't wake up Emily, surprisingly enough.
That's a
this
test.
This is the exercise after Emily goes to bed. Oh, man. Let's go to Diane in Milwaukee next. Diane, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. The lady who's so stiff after sitting for a while, she should check and see if she has spondylitis. That's what I have. If I go to a movie, I can hardly stand up and walk afterwards. It takes me, not minutes, but number of seconds before I can actually walk, to take gingerly steps. I don't think there's anything you can do about it. Unless you know something.
Yeah. Well, it's most likely due to a little bit of degeneration, and the stiffness is common. If it's an itis, that implies an inflammatory process and more of an active inflammatory process, and that's a little bit of a different animal. Usually the stiffness associated with that, it doesn't ease up in a minute or two. It lasts much longer than that, and that was one of the reasons why I asked her that question. And so you can have a little bit of degenerative changes that may not even show up on x-ray, and that can account for that stiffness. The key is, if that's what you experience, be careful when you first stand up, as I'm sure you're doing, and take a first, a few steps carefully, and then you can start picking up the pace. But it's fairly common, especially on the knees and hips and that low back area.
Yeah. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Back to plantar fasciitis for a minute. Chloe emailed and said she's had it for the past year and has not been able to get it under control with ice, massage, MBT shoes, heel seats, night splints, stretching. Do you have any advice for sufferers? She wonders if acupuncture can help.
Well, I would certainly give it a try. It sounds like she's tried just about everything. I wonder if anyone has gotten at the underlying etiology. I mean, it sounds like she's done a lot of the things that we can change and we have control over. But one has to wonder why it is that after all those interventions, nothing has changed. It makes me wonder if there's something that's missing.
Something else.
She maybe has a leg length difference that's been overlooked. Sometimes when you have, for example, when Nancy called in about her mom had a stroke, so she has a gait abnormality. Well, it doesn't have to be that severe a gait abnormality to cause a change in your gait mechanics. It may have to do with something in her lifestyle, how she stands, how she moves. So I guess my advice would be, if you haven't been evaluated from that aspect, to get in and have someone take a look or look at adjacent joints.
Yeah. For it to last that long, they haven't found the answer yet. And, we've had a number of callers who call it, whether it's plantar fasciitis or tennis elbow. Part of it depends on how long has the problem been there. and to what degree is the tissue irritated and inflamed. If it's been months and months and months, it doesn't clear up in a week or two. Now, having said that, a year, you know, if time is going to do it, she should be fine by now.
Right.
And it sounds like she's tried a lot of the typical things. And so, Lori said.
Well, one of the other things that patients tell us is that, for example, the night splint, it takes at least 2 to 3 months of use before you see any change.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So if people abandon it before then it may not help. And if she's at a job where she's on her feet all day.
Right. Footwear makes a big difference.
And the kind of surface that she's standing on.
Yeah. Okay. So often we recommend, if that is the case where she's on her feet or does walking as activity, it helps if people bring their shoes, their walking shoes or their work shoes in with them. So we can look at that along with their feet and other things too.
Let's turn to Nancy in Milwaukee next. Nancy, hello.
Hello, good morning to you. I'm calling because I know several people who've had excellent results with the use of a TENS machine. And I happen to have two different problems. One of them is ischial bursitis, and the other one is arthritis in my neck. If I wore one of these TENS machines, and I understand that they have either 3 or 4 electric leads, can those leads be widely dispersed around your body and provide effective treatment? And the other part of my question is the acupuncture any use for either of these problems?
In terms of the TENS unit, TENS is designed to help with your pain, so it can be useful to help with your pain. You could use it on your neck, and you could use it on your ischial bursitis, but I would say that those areas are too far apart to be used simultaneously. Although I'm not sure. The other issue is the settings for one may be different than the settings for the other because you're looking at two different problems. So they're at two different depths of the tissue where you're trying to affect. So it may or may not work. And a TENS unit would be fitted by a physical therapist. So you could go over that issue with the physical therapist at that time. So that was the first question. The second question,
acupuncture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I would say certainly to give acupuncture a try. It's been useful in many situations and different kinds of problems. I've had positive reports from patients. So it's certainly worth a try.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you for calling, Nancy. Appreciate it. Bob in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling about my wife. And thanks, by the way, for taking the call.
Sure.
My wife is a 41-year-old who last year started experiencing some pain in her wrist. She bumped it while she was moving, and it seemed to get worse over time. She went to her GP, who did an arthritic panel, and she came back normal on everything except for a slight elevation in the rheumatoid. Fast forward to a year later, and she still hasn't had any additional work done or checking on anything, but the problem has progressed to a point where her hands are extremely painful most of the time, pretty much all of the time. She's got it radiates in her left wrist across from the outside pinky area towards the index finger. And now a new symptom in her right hand, her index and middle finger knuckles are swelling with a slight discoloration, as is her distal phalange, pinky phalange.
Yeah. That's pretty classic.
Yeah.
And we did actually go to an orthopedic doctor, and he, you know, said there's not really much you could do. X-rays were normal, but
Have you seen a rheumatologist?
She has not as of yet.
That'd be my next stop.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Is there anything to further complicate matters? She's just under the 3-month mark for pregnancy.
Oh.
So is there any medications she can be taking to at least somewhat manage the pain or alleviate it other than... I know acetaminophen It helps a little bit, but she's trying not to take it as much as possible. Are there any anti-inflammatories that are more safe than others?
Yeah, that's what you want to clear. First of all, I think a rheumatologist is place to go at this point in time, based on what you described, Bob, and
right.
And probably the bump could have just been coincidental, or it just triggered things. And
sure.
We had an earlier caller that mentioned some of the challenges of it's difficult to diagnose rheumatoid arthritis, especially in early stages.
Right,
and that blood test doesn't always come back positive, and things don't always show up on X-rays early on either. And then, so I think that I agree that that's a good place to go. And then, your wife and you can work with the rheumatologist and the OBGYN, whoever you're working with the pregnancy in terms of medication.
Sure.
That's where you need to talk about what's safe to take and for how long, and what else might she be taking along with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in terms of what she could do to, I know you mentioned the hot and cold. She's extremely sensitive to cold, so I don't think that would be a good thing. Is there any exercises that might help in terms of loosening the joints up or making them less?
You know, I'd probably, again, I would work with the rheumatologist and the OBGYN on this. And
sure.
And it could be that her pregnancy has amplified some of the symptoms, because it just changes, all messes with all your connective tissues.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But I would say the best place for her to work would be in a pool. To get in a pool, to keep her joints loose, to keep her comfortable, to move her wrists and hands in a comfortable environment. So that would be my recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Jan in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. I've got this issue with my right hip. Extreme pain that comes and goes. The pain can be to the point where I can't walk, can't get up from a chair, and then it'll go away and won't show up for several days. I'll come and stay with me for several days. It's been going on for about 15 or 20 years, and I just don't understand what it is.
Have you seen anybody for this condition over the years?
I'm sorry, say again?
Have you seen a physician or a physical therapist for this condition over the years?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Lack of medical insurance.
Okay. All right. Well, if that's still the case, if you can see somebody, that's what I'd recommend after this length of time, and it sounds like the pattern isn't changing. The fact that it's been this long for years and it still comes and goes, so that makes me less concerned about something serious, about a stress fracture or something like that, because that wouldn't go on for 15 or 20 years with what you described. So is there a pattern of what brings it on? Is it after doing lots of walking or lots of standing, or...
Walking will definitely aggravate it. I'm limited to 100 or 200 yards before it starts aggravating me. It feels dry in there. I don't know how I can describe it other than it feels dry and gritty in the hip. When the pain is there and I'm trying to move. Does that make any sense?
It sounds like an osteoarthritis,
right,
kind of symptom, the crunching, crepitus, like it needs some lubrication kind of feeling.
Yeah,
that'd be a good way to put it.
Do you have access to a pool by chance? A
swimming
pool?
No, I don't.
Okay. Again, I'm not sure what you may have available resource-wise, but a pool may be a good place for you to do, and it's like a safe place to do some walking, some strengthening, to work on some endurance. I don't know if you can check with a local high school or some of the hotels that have pools sometimes have open times for public use. If there's a hospital or clinic close by and they have a pool, sometimes they have open times for the public or kind of group classes that are very, very inexpensive. That may be the best medium for you to get the biggest bang for your buck from an exercise perspective.
Okay. If I were to go to someone to have it looked at, what sort of testing are they going to want to do?
Well, they're probably going to probably start with X-rays would be my guess, considering how long this is going on and what you described. And also, again, I'm not sure when the last time you had a physical, what other tests they may do along with that. But first of all, just for someone to examine you, take a more detailed history, you know, check for range of motion and flexibility and strength, and see if they can help come up with a reason why, where's the pain coming from, and then why has it started, and why won't it stop? So something you just need to be examined kind of from head to toe, and then that may lead to some additional testing.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Cease emailed us and said, I think I have Dowager's hump.
Mm-hmm.
Upper back is rounded and frequently have a burning pain in the area of the shoulders and upper back. What do I do to have it diagnosed, and then how is it treated?
Well, the Dowager's hump is a... It's an increase in curvature. We all have curves in our spine. They're supposed to be there, and up at the base of the neck and between the shoulder blades, it should be slightly rounded. And Dowager's hump is just that. It's accentuated significantly, so it's that area of the lower neck, upper back is more rounded, and typically goes with that is stiffness, and it kind of forces our head forward a bit. And you know, if your head is aligned right over the rest of your body, the muscles don't have to work nearly as hard as if your head is stuck forward. So the muscles have to work harder if you're kind of stuck in that position when you move your head and neck, but also through your arms. We use a lot of your shoulder musculature attaches to that area in the shoulder blades, and so it puts muscles at a disadvantage. To diagnose it, generally you just need to look. You don't really need any other test to diagnose it. It's usually due to changes in shape of the vertebra that account for that change in the spinal curve. My guess is the burning pain, if it stays local in the area of the shoulder blades, I think it's probably muscles just fatiguing. You know, if it's burning pain that extends down into the arms or feet, then that's a little different. That's a different animal usually. And so it's probably, her symptoms are probably related to postural issues. And you know, if she hasn't seen somebody for this, sometimes exercise can help to a degree, but if she sits a lot, making sure she's got the right chair, if she's at a computer, the monitor at the right height to try to minimize the postural stresses can sometimes help.
Let's turn to Mary in Wausau. Hello, Mary.
Hi. I've recently resumed knitting, and after I've knitted for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, my fingers start to become numb. So I stop and wiggle them around and wait till the circulation comes back, and then I can knit again for a while. It also happens when I'm hand stitching with needle and thread.
Which fingers get numb?
Index, thumb, and middle finger on my right hand.
Okay. And it's just the one hand?
Yes.
Okay. We could have a little carpal tunnel syndrome, where the nerve for some of those fingers pass through a fairly narrow space, and if you're working with your wrist in a flexed posture, it puts pressure on that nerve. So, and if you have a little bit of arthritis in the area or a little wear and tear, then that space is narrowed even further. So there are some splints that you can use. For people who are very debilitated by this, there's surgery, but this seems to be more an avocation than a vocational issue. So I'd say just managing your time. Sounds like you're doing what you should. When they start to get numb, you kind of stop, you shake it out, you let it rest, and then you go back to it. But you could look at your posture and try to avoid excessively flexing your wrist. You can try wearing a wrist splint and see if you're still able to knit and sew with that splint on. Does it wake you up at night, or do you wake up with it numb in the morning?
No.
Okay. Otherwise, we would use splints at night, but those would be my suggestions.
All right.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, one of our guests, the other Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lori and Bill, we have an email from Eric who says, I've purchased the Vibram five-finger shoes and have taken up the style of running that avoids heavy heel strikes, sometimes called barefoot-style running. I've successfully done a few miles this way, but I've got pain and inflammation in the left ankle. It's only my left, and I'm wondering if I need to reduce mileage quite a bit, stop until the pain and swelling is gone, or what I should do.
Well, I'd be curious where in the ankle it is. My guess would be if he's running on his toes, that he's getting a little Achilles tendonitis, in which case he does need to cut back, because Achilles tendonitis can be a beast to get rid of. And it would be one of the downsides of that change, that cultural change into the barefoot running style. I could give a lecture on that, but I'll try to avoid the lengthy lecture this morning. But but anthropologically, the people in Mexico and South Africa who are barefoot running have historically over time developed because culturally that's what they do. In the United States, culturally, we don't run around barefoot a whole lot. Our terrain isn't designed for that kind of a lifestyle. So there are as a subgroup of people who can do well with that because genetically and anthropologically they are better designed for such an activity. Then there's the rest of us who do better with a little more support and a little more cushion and things like that. So I would say he definitely needs to cut back. If he's tender back in his Achilles tendon, I would be seen by somebody because it's very hard to self-manage an Achilles tendonitis.
We've had other emailers and callers describe having a similar situation. And when you change your walking style, whether it's by shoe or by intent, you need to transition slowly over time to see if you give your body a chance to accommodate to these changes. And in theory, could be good changes, but like Lori said, you can't undo hundreds of years of evolving that quickly.
Let's turn to Kevin and Gaze Mills next. Hi, Kevin. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a comment about the tendonitis,
okay,
or the tennis elbow, rather. I had what was called tennis elbow several years ago, and I'd had it for about 10 months. And I couldn't literally lift anything out in front of me. And to start off, not all chiropractors are good, but I went to a chiropractor who is, in my estimation, really good. And I mentioned the elbow pain, and he immediately said, "Oh, you got a rib out." He found the rib that was out, popped the rib in. The pain in my elbow instantly went away and never came back.
Wow.
Well,
that was 10 months of every day, all the time, elbow pain, gone instantly.
Yeah. Well, you were at the right place at the right time, which obviously is a very good thing for you. You know, the elbow pain, and typically classic with tennis elbow, it's the outside of the elbow. And for lots of people, that is the source of their symptoms. But it's also a common sort of referral pain pattern that can come from your neck, your upper back, and your ribs are tied in with that as well. So not everybody with lateral outside elbow pain has tennis elbow, although that's typically what people are going to call it. Mm-hmm. And so it's good you went to the place that looked elsewhere besides your elbow. Yeah, that's
well,
what you needed.
I was just calling for the person that called in earlier that possibly, a chiropractor could help them also.
Hey,
yeah, why not? Give it a try.
And I think it points to the importance of being seen. You know, sometimes Bill and I will say, well, you really need to go in and see somebody. And, sometimes you can sort of hear the collective sigh on the other end of the line. And we're sorry. But, we don't want to just add to, more medical practitioners sort of brushing you off saying, well, you must have tennis elbow and you need to do this. There are groups of people who don't fit into those categories. What we do is we look for patterns and we suggest what the most likely culprits are. But there are some people who that's not the case. And you do need to be seen to be evaluated for just the kinds of reasons that you've pointed out, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, the interesting part was I was going to somebody for 10 months, several times a week, who was telling me I had tennis elbow and I needed to figure out what was causing my pain and eliminate it. And when I changed and went to a different chiropractor, he immediately said, oh, yeah, and cured it instantly.
Well, that's great.
It's also a good point. 10 months of care and nothing changing is too many months long. In the majority of cases, what people that I see, I'm expecting changes to occur within the first 4 to 6 weeks, depending on how long it's been there. Mm-hmm. If things don't change within that time frame, then you have to start looking elsewhere. Either I'm missing something, it's been misdiagnosed, or the patient's not able to follow through. But you're right, 10 months, it's time to look elsewhere.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Kevin.
It, Kevin. Karen in Menominee up next. Hi, Karen.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
I'm a 62-year-old, and I do a lot of walking. But before walking, I had a lot of problems with my hips, knees, legs, and my feet. I was walking for about 3 months, and I ended up with plantar fasciitis so bad in my foot that I had to quit. I was doing some taping, I was icing, and I just couldn't take the pain anymore. It would go on to my ankle, on inside ankle, and on up into my leg. I went out and I bought myself a pair of these rocker shoes. I don't know if it's my imagination or what, but I do not have any pain in my hips, legs. My plantar fasciitis is a little painful, but it's not stopping me from doing anything. Is it a good investment to get a pair of better shoes, or is this all my imagination?
Well, geez, Karen, I'd say the evidence would suggest it was the right move for you. So, yeah, absolutely. Are rocker bottom shoes the right shoe for everybody? No. But better shoes, yes, better shoes, but it doesn't mean a rocker bottom. So, you know, again, the idea is to have your foot examined, have your foot evaluated, and not just your feet, but your hips, your knees, your ankle, your back, your posture, all those things come into play, and then finding the right shoe for you. And for you, it was a rocker bottom, and you discovered that apparently without intervening in the medical system at all. So more
good
congratulations
for
you.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, but it's matching the intervention to the patient, mm-hmm. and in this case, the rocker bottom shoe was right for you, maybe right for other people, may not be right for some folks.
Is that a brand of shoe, or is it?
It's a style of shoe where the bottom is slightly rounded, so it's
okay.
It's like
so
a rocker
rock or roll over your toes.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And let's turn to Lori next in River Falls. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, you guys.
Sure.
I am having some issues with my left arm and hand. I'm an artist. I use my hands a lot. My left arm tends to be my strength arm, I would say, where my right hand is my detailed. It seems to have some weakness in the thumb, and I'm thinking, carpal tunnel. But then I'm also having quite a bit of shakiness in the arm and the hands, especially after I do some, physical exertion with that arm. This morning I was working with an angle grinder, and after I put it down, grabbed for my cup of coffee, and it was quite shaky getting the coffee cup up to my mouth. And I also notice it when I'm carrying my son, who's 3 and about 40 pounds, if I'm carrying him around a lot. And mostly I use him, that side to carry him. I feel a little shakiness in that arm afterwards, too. And so I guess I'm wondering from you guys, I'm wondering if this is carpal tunnel or not. And, because some of the symptoms seem like it is, but the shakiness is, not a symptom. I guess I'm hearing that's associated with carpal tunnel. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are.
Yeah, Lori, I would agree with you. If it was thumb only in a certain part of your thumb and it was numbness or tingling like a previous caller, that sounds a little more like carpal tunnel. The shakiness is probably coming from more muscles further up the arm, around the shoulder, elbow trunk area. How long has this been going on?
Well, the shakiness has been going on for, I'd say, probably about 4 or 5 months now, real noticeably. I'm trying to pay attention to when it happens. It definitely seems to be exacerbated if I do physical,
right,
strenuous work with that arm. It tends to calm down after a while. It fluctuates. It's not always there. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't.
Okay.
But it does seem to be related to physical stress that I'm putting on the arm.
Yeah, it sounds so. Something's fatiguing in there. You know, if you have not seen a physician for this, that would be my recommendation. You know, and you're doing a good job of describing your symptoms. I would expect that they would do a good nervous system screen for you. They would also examine your neck as well as your hand and wrist area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this had only been going on for a couple of days or there'd been an injury and that's what started this and it's getting better, that'd be one thing. But especially mm-hmm. considering your vocation and you've got a young child who's only going to get bigger and heavier, you know, I would go in and have your physician take a look at this.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And always lots of callers online for you guys. And a great pleasure to have you with us. By the way, Bill and Lori will be here with us right up until 12:30 today. Lori's a senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. Bill, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. With us till 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at aches and pains today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, physical therapists at the University of Wisconsin. Lori's in the UW Sports Medicine Center, Bill in the UW Medical School. Great to have them here, and thank you very much for listening in. We're going to go to the phones right away because there are a lot of callers online, and let's go to Tom in East Troy. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I was going to ask about pain management, but when I first came on, I heard the tail end of a comment that a lady was making about switching to the right shoes, and you made the comment that that was great. You know, she found that on her own. I had some orthopedic surgery on my feet like 40 years ago. So needless to say, I've been a student of sore feet for 40 years, and it's been interesting what I've found over the years and at times when I've gone into specialists because, you know, I had something get inflamed or whatever, and you know, it always came back to my shoes. I mean, they were never able to tell me that, but over the years I was able to figure that out myself. So she absolutely did the right thing, and I rotate shoes. I have more shoes now than I ever dreamed I'd have.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, for better or for worse. And, you know, when my feet start getting sore, you know, I take a look at my shoes, and I might start wearing a different pair of shoes, or I might toss one out.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. You said that better than we could have.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's good advice. It just changes how the muscles work and the forces on that are coming through the joints of the foot and the ankle. It's a good protocol to follow.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for calling.
Did you have a question?
Oh, yes. No, I don't.
Okay.
There are times when I have to take, take something. You know, I found ibuprofen, I guess, I was never much of a pill taker, and over the years, you know, at times, it can be unbearable. So, I've taken ibuprofen and it really helps, you know, but I think there's an inner guilt that says, you know, you can't, every time your feet hurt, you can't take these pills, you know. So I know that they're swelling, and I know that at times, I have to do it. I'm just more concerned with how often could you do that? I mean, is that something? I certainly don't want to do it every day, but I mean.
Okay, so the question is: should you take ibuprofen every day? Well, I guess I would. The wise thing to do would be for me to refer you back to your primary care physician who oversees all of your health care needs to see how that fits within any other medications that you're taking and any other interventions for your feet. That being said, it sounds like you've had a long life history of foot problems and you've self-managed fairly well on your own. But remember that over time, our feet do change as we age. And if you haven't been seen in physical therapy for a reevaluation of your feet and a fine-tuning of your exercise program for a while, be a reasonable thing to do. Again, as things change and as our lifestyle changes, your exercise program should also change to reflect that. So I'd say getting in a pool for regular exercise to help maintain your body weight and strengthen mobility without putting a lot of load on your feet would be a good alternative for you.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Justin in Milwaukee, we turn to you. Hi, Justin.
Hi. I'm 23 years old, and my exercise of choice is weightlifting.
Okay.
And I'm usually in the gym 4 or 5 times every week. And this has been happening more and more frequently that when I'm working my upper body and I have to do exercises with my arms, I will get like a sharp pain in my wrist that shoots up to my forearm. Typically when I'm lifting heavier weights, and it makes it really hard for me to grab stuff. And when I am gripping something, I put it down and I have to wait 10 or 20 seconds before I let go because the pain gets that severe. I'm wondering if I'm lifting too much weight for my joints or if I'm pushing myself too hard. And what can I do to fix this?
I'd probably say yes to both those questions. So remember, anytime you're lifting a weight that you have to lift with your hands, you know, you think I'm working my pecs or I'm working my lats and you're thinking about those muscle groups. But that weight is being lifted through every joint in the kinetic chain from your fingers, wrists, forearm joints, your elbow joint, your shoulder. Okay, so the weak link in your chain is your wrist, so it can't handle the loads that your chest can, and that's a reasonable thing. So I'd say yes, you're probably lifting too heavy for what your wrist can take. Alternatives to that, modify the exercise, change the exercise loading so it's not loading through your wrist the same way. Do wrist strengthening exercises. Change the sequence of your exercises so that you're not loading your wrist in the same way from one exercise to the other. Wear a wrist splint. So those would be my top 5 suggestions.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Karen in Prairie du Sac, hello to you.
Hello. I'm just fine. I have a question about my hip pain. Last December I fell, and it hurt a little bit, but I got along fine until the spring when I started doing yard work. It really started hurting, and I finally went to the orthopedic doctor, and they took x-rays and found spurs, and gave me a cortisone shot, and it still didn't help at all. So then he did an MRI and found that I had a torn muscle on my hip. That I did have another cortisone shot, and that helped for about 3 weeks. But then I did some walking, and it started pain again. Hot, cold, what exercise, or just
okay,
wait and leave it heal?
All right.
Bill. Well, last December, that's a long time ago. I'm sure it's been kind of a miserable few months for you. My recommendation would be if you have not seen a physical therapist, then you should see one. Depending on which muscle was torn, it's going to alter how your hip moves, how other muscles are working. Your body's trying to compensate for what that muscle is supposed to be doing, and it alters how your posture, but especially when you're walking and doing things on your feet like that. Heat and cold, it's probably not going to get to the depth, and at this stage, this many months out, it's certainly not going to be curative. And the cortisone shot, although it may calm things down again, it's not going to fix the underlying problem. And so the trick would be is, can you compensate for that torn muscle? And if the answer is yes, it's going to be someone who overstrengthens muscle groups, make sure you have good flexibility in certain areas to try to normalize the load coming across that hip as much as possible. And I would also think they would look down at your footwear and your shoes. Again, anything that pertains to you standing. But at this stage, hot and cold is probably not going to do anything for you.
Okay.
A good examination for the things I mentioned should be able to come up with a program for you, Karen. That should have, I think, a reasonable chance for it to work for you.
Okay.
Because as soon as and when I'm walking, of course, I'm limping, and then that throws my back up.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. That's the cascade of things, and that's why you really want to get this taken care of as quickly as possible so you don't start developing problems elsewhere.
Yep. So physical therapy, they would be able to strengthen the muscles around that even, and how long does it take for a muscle like that to heal from the tear?
Yeah. Well, it depends. If it's a complete tear, then the muscle is not going to return to its normal function. If it's a partial tear, then it depends on which tendon and you know, healing doesn't always take place. So again, what you do is you try to compensate for that weakness, that limitation by overstrengthening other muscles, and you need flexibility to again help minimize the pressure on that muscle that's been torn. So it's a specific program designed for you based on which muscle was torn is what the physical therapist would come up with for you. Given you a sheet of exercise that you give to anybody with hip pain is not going to work for you. You've got a specific deficit that needs to be accounted for.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Brett in Mason City. Hello to you.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Say, I was curious. About 2 years ago, I was lifting a piece of plywood, like a 4x8 piece of plywood. And You have your fingers kind of wrapped around, you know, the board up top, and then I had my right hand down below. Mm-hmm. And I felt a pop in my pinky.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the end joint.
Mm-hmm.
Towards your fingernail. And it kind of tingled real good and hurt that day, and then now, even 2 years later, I've kind of got like a little ball in the middle part of the finger,
mm-hmm.
in the soft tissue, and mm-hmm. then it's still kind of a little sore once in a while.
Do you have full active motion and function of that finger?
I do, but it feels weaker than it used to, you know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I couldn't have said that any better myself,
yeah.
could I?
Yeah.
Well, what you did when you felt that pop is you probably ruptured a tendon in your finger, and the little ball you feel is the tendon rolled up. It kind of rolls up like a window shade.
Okay.
The most common place for that to happen is in your biceps, when you get a rupture of your biceps from its attachment at your shoulder, and then it rolls up, and some people think they have this awesome-looking bicep, when actually it's become detached, and it's rolled up like a window shade in the middle of your upper arm. So, and then you have some weakness there. I mean, that all makes sense. So, you know, the good news is it's your pinky. You know, you can try to strengthen adjacent muscles, just as Bill said, with regard to Karen. When you have a torn muscle, then you overstrengthen the other muscles to try to compensate for that. You can do some little resistive exercises with your pinky. You can do some ball squeezes, some rubber band exercises, things like that to help strengthen the other muscles. But, you know, 2 years down the road, there's not a surgery for you.
Yeah, and I'm not looking for that, mm-hmm. but I guess my question is, you know, even though it's just barely sore and I still have, I pretty much have all my strength there,
mm-hmm.
But will that cause an issue as I get older with the joints or with anything around there?
That's a really good question. I'd say unlikely in your pinky, given that you have good motion. If you said, I can't move it through the full range and it's really weak, I can't use it much, then I would put you in a higher risk category for development of arthritis. But given that you have pretty good strength and pretty functional use of it and good motion, I'd say no.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Craig in Columbus, Ohio. On to you now. Hi, Craig.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I went to a doctor last year, and he diagnosed me with jumper's knee. And I work in the field and do a lot of hiking and things like that. And I was wondering if there was any way I can manage it while I'm working, in the evenings, if I can ice it down, if that would help or anything like that, ibuprofen or...
Well, ibuprofen will help take the pain away, but what you need is a really good rehab program. This kind of a problem, jumper's knee, is it's an insertional tendonitis or tendinopathy. And it's like Achilles tendonitis. It's hard to get rid of because you use it all day long. Every time you take a step, especially if you're walking downhill, you really load that tendon. It's like a basketball player landing from a jump. That's why they call it jumper's knee. So the research is showing that, again, eccentric or the lowering phase of a muscle contraction is the way to go to treat these. And they often do them on a decline board. So they make a little slant board and your feet are pointed downhill and you do squats. So usually you lower yourself down with the uninvolved leg down to a 90-degree angle, and then you raise yourself back up with both feet. So you got to put the other foot down, go back up. Otherwise, you can do them two-footed, but you have to be careful to put equal weight on both. And then you increase the load by adding a backpack with weights. So that would be the home program version, along with some stretching and adding the ice on a day when you've been on your feet a lot. Or ibuprofen to control the inflammation. But I'd say if you really want to get rid of this, I'd go in and be seen by a physical therapist and get some more guidance on the program, because it is hard to manage on your own.
All right. I will do that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Rex and Humbard, hello to you.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have what I think is a pinched nerve in my elbow. I've got numbness at the very tip of my pointer finger, and I've got pain that shoots up into my shoulder area, a little bit into my pec. It's more of a throb, but I do sit when I'm at my desk. It's a little high, using my mouse, so it's a little high on there, and I think that makes it more numb. So,
okay, Rex, how long has this been going on?
I'd have to say probably about 3 weeks now.
Okay. All right. Any numbness in the other hand at all, or is it just your mouse hand?
Just the mouse hand, and it's just right in the tip of the pointer finger.
Okay. All right. Well, you're right in terms of the pinched nerve idea, or a nerve that's irritated. It's probably not at your elbow, though. What you're describing in terms of location, the fact goes up to your shoulder, it's probably something going on in your neck and not in your elbow. Sounds like you're at the computer a fair amount. Is that correct?
Some days, yes. Some days, no.
Okay. All right. And I recommend that you see a physical therapist. They can examine you, and they can help sort out, is it at your elbow, or is it your neck, or maybe both? And they can help you get rid of this. But I'm thinking long term, they can also talk to you about when you're at a computer. They can talk about your workstation, the best way to set that up. Because it doesn't sound like there was an injury. Sometimes posture can get people into trouble. And the computer is notorious for that, without a good ergonomic setup. So they could examine you in terms of your nerves and strength and flexibility, but then you can talk about, you know, the computer situation, and they should be able to give you some good advice pretty easily.
Do you got any suggestions for someone who is not a fan of hitting the doctors?
Well, not a fan. I do understand. I guess what I would look at, from what you're telling me right now, I wouldn't see this taking lots and lots of visits. The fact that it's been 3 weeks and only 3 weeks is a good thing. But when you talk about numbness, you know, or weakness in the nervous system, and it sounds like a nerve again is being irritated or compressed. You don't want to mess around with that, because you've waited till it can take months and months and months to go away. And I would think probably a couple of visits to try to get this jump started for you, and then really alter how you're sitting and how you're using that mouse. I think get a lot of mileage out of that and prevent some things from down the road. And so you can go to a physical therapist, and they can examine you and point you in the right direction.
There you go.
Right, and you made the point early on that your workstation wasn't set up right, that you were already aware of that. Well, geez, that's the first easy step, is to fix that and see how far you get with just changing your posture at your workstation.
Yeah.
And go from there.
All right. There you go. Thanks very much for calling. Email from Kelly. I'm a female distance runner, suffered stress fracture to both tibias last year twice.
Oh.
After taking time off and slowly coming back to running, I've now been stress fracture free for a year, average around 40 miles of running per week. I scale back when it comes to training for races. Haven't run a marathon since April of this year. However, my shins are a constant issue. After most long runs and after more intense runs, my shins feel spongy. They feel like they're being squeezed like a sponge when I step down and then relax like a sponge when I unload the leg. Usually takes about a day for this to disappear as long as I don't run. Anything I can do to end these shin problems once and for all without giving up distance running?
Probably, but this sounds like a much more complicated case than I could probably answer in 60 seconds on the radio. I expect, given her history of stress fracture, she's been in the medical system. The feeling, the spongy feeling after running, is a new symptom to me. That's not a common symptom.
It's really not stress fracture. I think it could be compartment syndrome, maybe.
Well, I'm not sure it would be
spongy.
It would usually be numbness or tingling or pressure.
Right.
So I would say if she hasn't been evaluated for her running gait, we have a runner's clinic at the UW Sports Medicine Center. And I would say getting in there and looking at her gait mechanics and getting a full head to toe would be the place to start for her.
All right. There you go. Let's go to Phyllis in Verona. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi there. About a week ago, I fell riding my bike, and I hit my left knee. I got a minor scrape on it and some bruising, and I iced it right away. And it's been fine in terms of walking, and I've even gone biking since then. But what's puzzling to me is the excruciating pain that I have if I put any kind of pressure on the bruised area around it. And I guess I'm trying to think of other bruises I've had have never been as sensitive. Like last night, I bumped it against a coffee table, and I just practically went through the ceiling with the kind of pain. Is this typical of bruising around the knee? Is it going to take a while, or should I be trying to do something else to prevent any long-term problems?
Two questions, Phyllis. One, what is your age, if I might ask? And second, where is the bruise on your knee?
I'm 56, and the bruise is on the top inside, over the top of the knee. The scrape is actually on the kneecap area, and it is also somewhat bruised on the left bottom part of the knee.
The left bottom part of the knee. So when you touch the bruise, is it right over the bone?
No, it's not. It's really seems to be the bruising seems to be circling the kneecap.
Okay. Around the kneecap. Well, because if you fell and you could have a small fracture of one of the bones, either the kneecap itself, with the bruising going around it. So the first thing when people touch an area that is bruised, if you tap it, tap, 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 and you get this, yeah, that's one of the tests for a fracture. So it's possible that you have a little chip fracture or a hairline fracture somewhere. So that's the first thing. And so I'd say you want to get that ruled out first.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Lori and Bill, thank you so much. You'll be back on October 18th. I have in my calendar.
Okie dokie.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. Lori and Bill will be back on October 18th. And I hope you'll take a look at our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Lots of good stuff up there. And even a picture, I think, of Lori and Bill I took one day during the show. Lori's a physical therapist at UW Sports Medicine. Bill, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. They'll be back on the 18th of October. Tomorrow, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk talks about your pet's health. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.